Well, for those of you who've been here over the last several weeks, you'll know that we've been doing a series called Amazed. And it was really born out of a time my family and I we had a little getaway with our family down to Chautauqua Lake this summer. And as we were there with our grandchildren and with other people, obviously, that were at the park, it gave me an opportunity to just observe human behavior and, you know, people in general, including my own family. And as I was watching, I just couldn't get over the fact that the younger children were so mesmerized and so amazed by the different rides, the different things that were going on. They were just like in heaven, you know what I mean? They were just like, what? This is awesome. And as you kind of went up the age bracket, you kind of saw the not so much, right? Like we can't wait till this is over so we can do something else, right? And I thought to myself, I wonder, you know, if a similar dynamic doesn't occur in our spiritual walk, because I think we can all relate to the time that we came to Christ, and there was such, you know, there was such a newness to everything, such a freshness to everything, to life, and just seeing things from a different perspective. And then as you go on in that, I think sometimes instead of being born again, you can end up being bored again. And so what I've been trying to do over these last number of weeks is just remind us maybe to reinvigorate that sense of being amazed in us, because when we're amazed, or when we're able to be amazed, then we start to anticipate and get excited about what God's doing. You know, if we're just kind of ho-hum, it just kind of takes the life out of the sails of our the wind of our spirit and out of the sails of our heart. And so anyways, we've been taking a look at some different things. And one of the places that we've been looking at is creation. And you may remember the one week we talked about some different animals and how God has done an incredibly intricate, amazing way of putting some animals together, all animals together, but some of the ones we looked at. You remember the giraffe and the size of the heart in the giraffe? If when the giraffe bends his head over to get a drink of water, if God hadn't put in little valves in the system, the heart, when it expanded or went to pump the blood, would blow the top of the brain right out of the giraffe because of the intensity of blood pressure there. Then we talked about our own human bodies and how God has so made them in such an incredible way that they work most of the time really good. And the one thing I didn't say to you that week that I wanted to say to you today is, you realize that when he set this thing in place for it to work like it should, if one little thing gets like out of whack, the whole system like goes wonky on us, right? It just goes crazy. So we are definitely fearfully and wonderfully made. Then we took a look at that little worm, the crimson worm. The Hebrew word is the word tolof. And anyways, we looked at that little worm and how God made that little worm. And that little worm, it really tells the story of redemption. It tells the story of what Christ has done for us. And then last week we looked at, just took a little peek into our world, into our solar system, and we were talking about how everything is just so, we're just the right distances and all that kind of thing. And Jeannie was telling me after the service, I was talking about that idea of gravitational pull. If we were to, estimate what it would take, or what the chances are of the gravitational pull being just right for it to support life. She was telling me that in her lessons, one of the things she does with her students at school is talk to them about the idea of gravitational pull. And if it's just not right, she was saying that what would happen is our organs would get crushed or fall out. If it's too much, the organs get crushed, and if it's there you go. And so even in her lesson, I said, "Where were you last week? I could have used you. You know, why don't you step up here?" So anyways, I want to take us on our concluding week here. I want to take us back to kind of where we started, because the very first week I said to you that one of the things that stands out to us in Scripture is how people were amazed by Jesus. They were utterly amazed by him, and I just want to remind you of some different things they were amazed about him. I want to take you through a few scriptures here. The first one's in Luke 4:22. Everyone spoke well of him and were amazed by the gracious words that came from his lips. The first thing I noticed that people were amazed about Jesus is how he treated people and the things that came out of his mouth. You know, the things that he spoke, the things that he said. And right here we have an example of it. The next one that I wanted to point out to you. Okay, go ahead, guys. Next slide. That worked great for one. There you go. The disciples were amazed, saying, "Who is this man?" They asked, "Even the winds and the waves obey him." One of the things that you see in Scripture when you think of people being amazed by Jesus is they were amazed that he had control over the weather, right? Had control over the elements that were out there. They were definitely amazed by him. Go ahead, the next one. Matthew 15:31, it says, "The crowd was amazed. Those who hadn't been able to speak were talking. The crippled were made well. The lame were walking. The blind could see again. And they praised the God of Israel." I wrote down here in my notes that people were amazed by his ability to physically heal people. I know right now downstairs in our 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock hour, we're doing a series on Jesus, and part of the series is talking about his miracles right now. And one of the things that amazed people, it just blew their mind, was the fact that Jesus Christ could make sick people well again. It amazed people, and there's an example of that. All right, how about Luke 4:36? Next slide. "Amazed, the people exclaimed, 'What authority and power this man's words possess. Even evil spirits obey him, and they flee at his command.'" I put number four, people are amazed by his power to set people free from demonic activity. Just totally amazed. So people who were out of their minds became right in their minds again, but just by Jesus speaking a word over their life. Isn't that amazing? Are you amazed? You look bored. All right, how about the next one? Mark 1:22. "The people were amazed at his teaching, for he taught with real authority, unlike the rest of the teachers of the law." So the things Jesus the way he treated people, the way he spoke with his lips, the words that came out of his mouth, people were amazed by that. They were amazed by him being able to speak to the winds and the waves and the fig tree. He spoke to the fig tree withered, how he dealt with creation. They were amazed by how he could physically heal. They were amazed by how he could restore somebody who was messed up demonically and put that person back in their right mind. But here we have the simple idea that people were amazed at the things that he taught other people. They just, it's like, I think we've all been on the receiving end of being in a teacher's company where we're like, wow, that was awesome. And everything Jesus taught was like that. Everything he said, he did, it says, unlike the teachers of the law. One of the things I'm reminded is that when the teachers taught, they simply taught what others had taught them. It was like a regurgitation of other things that they heard. When Jesus was teaching, this was fresh news off the press, right? He wasn't borrowing from others. He was staying it straight from heaven, the things that he was saying. And so I wanted to conclude with this. In Mark chapter 7, the next slide, please. Mark chapter 7, I think this verse sums it up. People were completely amazed and said again and again, "Everything he does is wonderful." Wow, that's amazing. That can't be said about us. Yeah. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Everything he does is wonderful, right? And I thought about this, and I thought to myself, self, there is a reason for that. I mean, think about this for a minute. The one who created the winds and the waves could speak to the winds and the waves. The one who created the very physical bodies that were lame could speak to those physical bodies because he had created them. The one who created the very soul in the human being could speak to the soul and any adverse things that were going on in that soul and make it right again because he had made that soul. He had breathed that soul. He was the one who had created everything. Even the words that he spoke were creative words. Go to the one slide. I just want to remind you of this. Here's the next one. It says, through Christ all things were made. Without him nothing was made that had been made. Nothing. Zero. And then we have this one in Colossians. Colossians chapter 1. Go ahead, the next slide, please. For by Christ all things were created, things in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers and authorities, all things were created by him and for him. So this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, of course, they were amazed because the very creator was in their midst. The very one who spoke this world that we've been talking about into existence was in their midst. Now, I don't know about you, but I've always been fascinated by the idea of meeting somebody that was a cool creator, inventor type person. You know, like a Leonardo da Vinci or a Thomas Edison or, you know, somebody who had done something significant in life. Had invented something, had created something. I've always thought to myself, I would love the opportunity to sit down with a person like that. Well, guess what? We've got our opportunity this morning. He's here. One of the founding fathers of our country decided to show up at PCF this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to, if you would with me, give a warm welcome to Benjamin Franklin. Hey, welcome. I've longed for this day to be able to sit and just glean from you.
Thank you.
Man, a few words. I wrote down some questions so that I wouldn't forget to ask them here this morning. It's good to have you here. We've been doing this sermon called Amazed, and I must say, from what I've read, you are absolutely an amazing guy. I want to start with your writings. It says over 250 years ago, you wrote some very wise sayings. Could you give us an example of some of those?
I think one of my most famous would be early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Oh, that's a good one. You know, I've heard some people say they thought that was actually in the Bible.
No, that was me.
Could you give us another example? I think you've had some other little quips and quotes like that.
There's been lots. One I kind of am fond of, I don't even really understand it myself, but we are all born ignorant, but it takes work to remain stupid. I don't get that one, but.
I had never heard that one before, but when I heard it, I thought, it's so true.
I hope so. I hope so.
I heard that you even helped Thomas Jefferson write the Declaration of Independence. Is that true?
Yeah, I put in a few thoughts for him, yeah.
That's amazing. And I also understand that you speak fluent French.
Oui.
That's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Let's talk about, these are the things I really want to get to. Let's talk about some of the inventions that you've had over all the many years that you were doing things. Is it true that you invented swim fins?
Yes, a lot of your scuba people can thank me for that. You know, when I was, any scuba people here today? Probably not. When I was a kid, I would craft wooden paddles to fasten to my hands and feet. So that's really where my inventing started.
I see. I see. Well, that's pretty cool. So I also understand that you were credited with inventing bifocals. Now, how did that come about?
Well, I've struggled my whole life with the two pair of glasses problem. You know, one for seeing far, one for seeing near. And one day it just hit me. Why not have these lenses cut in half, put together in the same frames, and I wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. So you can thank me for that one.
Wow, that was brilliant. That was brilliant. And listen, I'm just using the one distance ones right now. But when I get to the other point, I'll thank you. I'll thank you for creating such
you
an
should.
Invention. Tell me about another one I've heard of. I didn't know it was you until just recently, but I'm fully aware of my mom and dad lived with us for a year and a half, and they both used them for almost everything. Tell me about the long arm invention that you had.
Yes, some of you may think of it as the grabber. That's a trademark item in your culture these days. You may have seen it on TV, but if you can't reach something, get a grabber, reach, pull the trigger. You know, I'm the one who thought of that.
Wow.
I was trying to reach some books up on the top shelf, and bam.
Wow. And I also understand that you don't see them hardly at all nowadays, but I understand you invented what's called the, I want to make sure I get this right, the glass harmonica?
Yes, that is a musical instrument that you may or may not be familiar with. And maybe, I didn't ask the guys in the back, but if you want to Google that, maybe you can find a sound sample for us. But you
did you in fact Google?
No, I can't take credit for that one.
Oh.
But yeah, the glass harmonica, if you've ever rubbed your finger on the rim of a glass and gotten the musical tone out of it, that's what the glass harmonica was based on. It's actually a long rod with many glass bowls attached to it, and it's the rod spins, and you can touch all the different tones on the glasses.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful sound.
I actually, I Googled it myself this week to see, because
yeah.
I'd never heard of it before, and that's exactly what it sounded like.
Benjamin Franklin songs.
Thank you. Yes, Mozart and Beethoven both wrote compositions for that instrument.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. So those are some very interesting things. I wanted to ask you about if there was any other invention that you've had that you wanted to mention before I talk to you about the main one that we're all here to find out about today.
I know, I just can't forget to mention the flexible urinary catheter.
Yes, the flexible urinary catheter.
Yes, I think it's much more comfortable than the inflexible one that they used to use.
And we have you to credit for that.
You can thank me.
Wow. Well, listen, those are all very interesting, but I don't think any, and I think as people growing up and whatnot, we probably remember you best for the kite thing. Could tell us about what it was you discovered, and you know, obviously you have the kite with you here today.
Carry it with me everywhere I go.
You who?
I carry it with me everywhere I go.
Oh, it's nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it was back in the 1740s, and people didn't really know much about electricity in those days, but there were some scientists working on it. I was one of them. We understood that there was positive and negative charges. We were able to create static electricity. We were able to store static electricity in kind of what you would think of as a battery, a primitive battery called a Leyden jar. And so we were doing experiments with that, and my theory to build on that was that lightning was electricity.
Yeah.
And I needed to prove that to the scientific community, so I came up with some ideas, but nothing was really working because I lived in Philadelphia at the time, and the land is very flat there, and I knew I needed to get up high to reach like a metal rod into the clouds, and then build a tower, or there was no tall buildings at the time to use or anything, so finally it hit me, use a kite. So what I did is I attached the metal wire to the top of the kite, and I had on the string at the bottom, I had a key, metal key, attached to the string. And to the key, I attached another line that led to the Leyden jars to collect the static electricity charges. And a lot of people think I was out there in a lightning storm in danger of being hit by lightning, but I actually was, once I got the kite up in the air during some inclement weather, I was able to step in the entryway of a barn. So I was actually undercover because I wanted to keep the string that I was holding dry, of course. And I was actually standing on some insulating material. I'm not stupid. And so I had that all set up. And I was not trying to get hit by lightning. And I was not trying to get my kite hit by lightning. I was trying to get the kite high enough into a storm cloud to begin to collect the static electricity that I theorized was in the air around that cloud, and it worked. And the static electricity came through the wire, down through the string, which was wet, so it conducted the electricity. By the way, conducting electricity, yes. That's one of my terms I coined. I also coined a couple others, but you don't have time for all of that. But some words you still use today in the electrical field were from me. Anyway, I was able to collect the charges into the Leyden jar and proved that it was electricity up there in the clouds. And that really led to what I think is my favorite invention.
Okay, let's
which
hear.
Is the lightning rod. And proving that lightning is electricity enabled me to use that concept to put a metal rod on top of the building. You're probably familiar with lightning rods.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then the wire that goes down to the ground to ground the charge and dissipate the electricity. And in my day, there was so many fires, buildings set on fire from electricity, so many lives lost, that that's really my favorite invention because it's just so gratifying to know that I saved so many lives and so many properties with that simple invention.
Wow. Wow. It's pretty crazy, isn't it? Well, Mr. Franklin, I can't tell you what a dream has come true for me today, to be in the company of somebody who is like a famous inventor. I mean, there's a creative element to what you've done. There's no doubt about it. And I just want to thank you for I don't know what time machine you used to get here today, but thank you for coming and gracing us with your presence.
You're welcome.
It's been a treat that I will never, ever forget, I promise.
Thank you.
Let's give him a round water of applause. That's a spoof on that, but can you imagine being in the company of someone who's gone down in history as being a famous inventor, creator, whatever? It would be phenomenal to spend time in their company. But I think about that in terms of Jesus. It's like that's on steroids, right? I mean, meeting somebody like Benjamin Franklin would be one thing. Meeting somebody like Jesus who put all this stuff together and has caused it to work just so. To be in his company would be, I mean, it would be utterly amazing. But the most amazing thing, with all that he's created, with all that he spoke and said and did, all the miracles he performed, the most, still for me, the most amazing thing is his grace towards us. I want you to go to the next verse. I shared this one with you last week. This is David writing, saying, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you've set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him? I mean, really, when you think about this whole thing, the fact that he stepped out of heaven, out of his control room of heaven, came down as a pauper on planet Earth to make it possible for you and I to really have a life, that is utterly amazing. I want to remind you of what the definition of grace is. If you could go to the next slide. Some of you may want to write this down. Grace is the unmerited, undeserved, unearned kindness and favor of God. Now, I want to make sure you're clear about this. Some people think grace is the enabling power of God. Let me example that for you. Let's say that we were all in a boat going down a river, and that river, let's think of it in terms of Niagara Falls. We're going down, what's the name of that river? Niagara River. And right? Is it Niagara? Okay. We're going down the Niagara River, and we are about to go over the abyss of Niagara Falls, and we'll call that bottom gorge hell. And some people think grace, this is how they perceive grace. They think grace is that while we're traversing along there, God reaches out and hands us a couple of oars so that we have something to paddle with. And if we row hard enough, we can prevent ourselves from going over Niagara Falls and into the abyss. Well, I want to be accurate and clear that there's no doubt that grace is the enabling power of God in our lives. But I would say this, it's more about what it does than what it is. Because what it is the unmerited, undeserved, unearned kindness and favor of God. I want to unpack those words there for us for just a minute. When I say unmerited, this is what I want you to think. In Ephesians 2, 8 and 9, it says this, for it is by grace you have been saved through faith, and this not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. The idea of merit means is that I'm worthy of, or that I should be getting something that's coming my way. Now, when that happens, when we feel merited, it gives us room to boast. When we feel important or of value, it gives us a place to be able to boast. This verse says, there be no boasting about grace. Did you know that there will be no boasting in heaven? You will be not saying, I'm talking even about spiritual boasting. There's nobody going to be saying, I'm more spiritual than the other person. That's absent from heaven. There's a lot of it down here. But you need to understand grace. The grace of God extended towards us is unmerited. None of us are worthy. None of us are that important that we merit it. It goes on, I use this other word, unearned. In that verse there in Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, it says, it is the gift of God, not works. Paul in Romans chapter 11, verse 6, he's talking about the remnant of God's chosen people. And this is what he says. He says, if this happens by grace, then it's no longer by works. Then it's no longer by works. If it were grace, would no longer be grace. Let me say it to you this way. When you give a gift to somebody, when it's a true gift, when it's a true act of grace and you're giving something to someone, you don't along with it hand them the bill. The only way that that's really the case is when your kids have bought something for you. Right? Because you know you're paying the bill for what you've just been handed. Here, Dad, we got you this. Mom helped. It's on the credit card, right? Grace is unearned. You can't work for it. You can't earn it. There's nothing you do. It's simply a gift from God toward us. That's amazing. This is a gift from the guy who set the stars in place. This is a gift from the guy who put your body together to work just so. I'm now giving you grace. It's undeserved. Romans 3:24 says, yet God with undeserved kindness declares that we are righteous. Now, I want to talk about this undeserved thing for just a minute. The Greek word, go to the next slide. The Greek word for grace is the word charis. That's how we pronounce it. It's really properly pronounced charis because there's some letters that sound different in the Greek. Now, what's interesting about this word is that this word was in place well before Christians ever got a hold of it. And here's what I mean by that. In their culture, this word, charis or charis, was used for a particular event or transaction that happened in their culture. And because it was used in what I'm about to tell you, in the way that it was, Christians decided to take that word to try to explain God's interaction with us. Are you with me? So there was something that went on in their culture that took place between two individuals. And it was simply this. A superior person, and when I say superior, I mean a well-off person. A superior person would in his heart feel led to do something for an inferior person. And when I say inferior, I mean a person who's less well off. So the superior would, out of the benevolence of his heart, say, I want to do something for this other person. Most of the time, that person was unknown to them. It would be like you and I in New York City seeing a homeless person, and I decide I want to take something of my well-offness and give it to this person who has nothing. They call that charis or charis. That's what that action was called. And so Christians decided to steal that idea of being benevolent or generous towards another person and giving them, not because they worked for it, not because they deserved it, not because they merited it, but simply out of the benevolence of one's heart, they would give something to someone else. They called that grace. That's how we've come to understand it. Amazing grace. And so this morning, I want to leave you with a couple of things. One, I want to leave you with a definition from a Bible encyclopedia. If you could go to the next slide, please. Look at this definition. Grace is the dimension of divine activity that enables God to interact with human indifference and rebellion with an inexhaustible capacity to forgive and bless. An inexhaustible capacity to forgive and bless. You know, that last breath you just took, that's the grace of God. You know that one you just took right now? That's the grace of God. It's keeping you. Remember we talked about some of the things last week that are keeping us alive? It's the grace of God that keeps you living every day. Now, I want to leave you with a picture of grace. I want to introduce you, maybe some of you have heard of these two people before. Their names are Dick and Rick Hoyt. Dick and Rick Hoyt. I want to tell you their story. On Veterans Day, Dick is a retired colonel in the military. And Rick was born, his son Rick was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck and it shut off his oxygen supply. And so Rick was never able to walk or talk. But even though he was that, at a young age, even though he was unable to walk and talk, his parents were able to know somehow that this kid of theirs was incredibly brilliant. When the father talks about it, he says there was something I could just in his eyes know that he wasn't like brain dead, you know, like he knew there was stuff going on in there. So in 1973, some computer engineers got together, and imagine this, this is back in 1973, they got together and were able to build or create a computer that actually Rick could move the cursor with his eyes. And when he got to the letter, his mom and dad taught him how to spell. And when he would get to the particular letter, he could move his head enough to bounce a little button on the side of the chair in the computer, and he could start to spell words for his parents. That's amazing, isn't it? That's utterly amazing. In 1977, one of Rick's friends, the boy now, one of his friends was in an accident. And from the accident, he became totally paralyzed. So in an effort to raise money for the family of this boy that he was friends with, they decided to set up a 5K race to help raise money. When Rick found out about that, he was able to spell words to tell his dad, I want to run in that race. But he can't run. So his dad started to train so that he could push Rick in a wheelchair in this 5K race. Since then, they ran that race. They finished the race. I don't know where they finished in the race, but they finished the race. And when the race was over, Rick typed to his dad and said, this is the first time I've ever felt like I wasn't handicapped. Since that time in 1977, Dick and his son Rick have run 72 marathons. A marathon is 26 miles. They have done, listen, 257 triathlons. For those of you who don't know, a triathlon is 2.4 miles of swimming, followed by 26 miles of running and 112 miles of biking. When Dick swims, he pulls Rick in a little raft behind him. When he runs, he pushes Rick in a wheelchair. And when they ride the bike, Rick is right there in the front seat of the bike that he drives. And I put, oh, and by the way, in 1992, they ran and biked across the United States 3,735 miles, listen to this, in 45 days. I couldn't even get to my house from here in 45 days. I want you to see this clip.
Who taught the sun where to stand in the morning? And who told the ocean you can know? This fire, and who showed the moon where to hide till evening? Whose words alone can catch a falling star? Well, I know my Redeemer lives.
My Redeemer lives. We're the ones in the chair. That ain't you pushing the chair. That ain't you. Everything that God has allowed us to experience and accomplish in this life is simply because of His amazing grace. You may think you're the one trying to row. But God is telling you that He is the one pushing you. He's the one pulling you. And He's the one carrying you. All He is asking us to do is get in the chair. Let me rephrase that. All He's asking you to do is let Him put you in the chair, because you can't even get in the chair yourself. Who is man that you are mindful of him? The Son of Man that you care for him? As incredible as we have discovered how God has made this amazing world of His, there is still, having looked at all that, having talked about all that, there is still nothing more amazing than His grace. When you see yourself as the one in the chair, and that every day it's simply His mercy and grace at work, you will never stop being amazed. I wonder if you'd pray with me. I don't know. I know we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but could the worship team come back to the platform? Is that possible? I know where everybody's at. And can we do that last song that you did in a minute? The amazing song. Amazing song. All right. Yeah. Lord, we don't want to take Your grace for granted. We want to wake up every day, Lord, aware of the fact that the very fact that we woke up is Your grace. That every day You've given us meaningful things for us to do. Jobs to go to, people to know, lives to touch, and it's all because of Your great grace, Your amazing grace. You've gotten a number of people, even right here within this room, Lord, through some really yucky physical things. You've gotten others through some really yucky spiritual things. You've gotten others through some mental things, Lord. And we just want to say and recognize afresh this morning, it is Your great grace. As thankful as we are for all of our the people that You put around us to help us in those ways, we just want to say thank You. Thank You for being mindful of us. Thank You for caring for us. Thank You for Your amazing grace. And Lord, I pray this morning the therapist, is anyone that happens to be here that's never really allowed their lives to get reinvented and kind of retooled, Lord, because they've locked on to the revelation of your grace. I pray today would be the day that their eyes would come open to your amazing grace for them. Personally and individually, Lord, would you reveal yourself to them? And Lord, for those who are struggling, they feel like they're doing life, and they are those people with the oars trying to row as best that they as they can, Lord. I pray today that they will see that it's more about what you're doing than what they're doing. They will be free to just rest in your grace and allow you to pull them along and to push them along, Lord. And for those of us, Lord, who've been on this journey for a while, if any of us, Lord, including myself, if there's a bone in any of us thinking that we're the ones that are making this all happen, Lord, I pray you would take that out of us, Lord. So we can, like the song that we're about to sing says, Lord, we can fall on our knees. That none of us are too proud, Lord, to not be able to humble ourselves before you. We thank you for your great grace. You are truly amazing. And all those people in the Bible, Lord, they got just a glimpse of it while you passed by them, Lord. And they knew there was something different about you. There was something totally out of this world about you, Lord. And we're still saying that about you today, 2,000 years later. You are amazing. Everything you have done is wonderful. Everything you are doing now is wonderful. And everything that you have yet to do, Lord, will be wonderful. I'm praying that you would give us eyes to see it, ears to hear it. Save us from this place we live in, Lord, who causes us to be numb and blind and all the stuff they throw at us, Lord. It seems to deaden our souls. And I'm praying, Father, for a fresh wind of your grace to blow across each one of our hearts so that we can speak the language again, Lord. We can hear you when you're speaking. We can see you when you're doing, Lord. Amaze us, Lord. Speak, for your servants are listening, Lord.